Beginning our class, we're continuing our series on Judaism from head to toe, and today we will talk about the ears, we will talk about what we listen to, Lashon Hara. Are we allowed to share other people's secrets? Are we allowed to share with our wives things that are other people's personal information? We will talk about piercing ears, men, women, piercing ears, piercing in general. Got to cover the ear a little bit, right? Judaism head to toe. So we're working our way down. We covered the hair above the ear. We discussed last week the mitzvah of Pe'at HaRosh, not shaving this hair shorter than a hair that can be folded onto itself. And now we move on to the ear itself. So let's go one step at a time. Number one, what can we listen to? So Rambam says speech is divided into a few different categories. We have speech, which is a mitzvah. When you say a blessing, when you say a prayer, when you say good things to other people, there's speech that's a mitzvah. Then there's learning Torah. The speech itself is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to listen to Torah. Every word of Torah that we hear is another mitzvah. So that's good things to listen to. Then there are things which are permissible. Hey, did you know there was a sale? Hey, did you hear that so-and-so got engaged? There's talk which is not a mitzvah nor an avera. It's basic talk, right? What's for lunch? What's for dinner? Where do you come from? Basic speech. And then there's speech that's prohibited. So what speech is prohibited? So we know it's prohibited to say Lashon Hara. In a coarse sense, we have a whole series on Lashon Hara, but in a coarse sense, Lashon Hara is something either demeaning to the other person or something about someone which they would rather we don't say. Meaning sometimes you could say it's not demeaning, it's a compliment. The guy used to be a cannibal, now he's here in Machon Meir. He's a giant. Right, but he doesn't want everyone to know that part of his being a giant. So there are things that are demeaning, and then there are things that you don't want other people to hear, even if they're not necessarily demeaning. So that's a general headline of what is Lashon Hara. I'm not allowed to say something, even if it's not demeaning or the other person wouldn't want me to say, but it might cause him inadvertent harm. It could cause harm to his reputation, it could cause harm to his family, it could cause harm to his livelihood. So that also falls under the category of Lashon Hara. So that's a brief overview, okay? So that's a tremendous transgression. Last week someone came over to me and asked me a question which was completely irrelevant. He wanted to know if someone was dishonest with someone else, and I said, can I offer you a piece of pork? He said, what? I said, it'll be more delicious and less transgressions. You asked me for Lashon Hara. Why don't you have a piece of pork? It's less transgressions and it's more delicious. You're asking me Lashon Hara. Why should I tell you that? It's more transgressions, less delicious. Let's just go out for a cheeseburger. Well, we'll be better off. So he got the hint. People don't take Lashon Hara seriously, but it's a very serious transgression. So that's one type of speech we're not allowed to hear. People will very often be lenient with their spouses. They'll come home and say, do you know what happened in shul today? So we had a very interesting Shabbos Shuva. Someone asked to be chazan, an old man. He asked to be chazan Shabbos Shuva. And he davened Musaf. And after his Kedusha, he forgot to say HaMelech HaKadosh in the concluding blessing. And by the time we corrected him, he was a very old man. Too much time had elapsed. He had to start the whole Shemona Esrei all over again. So the whole crowd got to hear something pretty unique. A chazan made a mistake that made him repeat from the beginning. So his son was there in shul. And later on, I had a chance to meet his son and his daughter-in-law. And I said to his son something to the effect of, is your father okay with the fact that he had to repeat the... And I could see that his wife had no clue what had happened in shul. So I hadn't realized she wasn't there in shul. And he was careful to adhere to the laws of Lashon Hara. He did not tell his wife what had happened to his father. He was right, I was wrong. And he said, I taught myself. She was like, what? What are you talking about? I said, never mind, right? I suddenly realized he was in perfect adherence of the halacha. He was right. He had not told his wife. The whole shul was there, but his wife had no reason to know. It was an embarrassing thing for his father. She hadn't been there in shul, so she didn't know. So in the laws of Lashon Hara, we we also have to be careful with our own spouses. Things that are not pertinent for them to know, there's the same criterion of Lashon Hara. So we have to share with them other things that are of interest. Every woman likes when you tell her a secret, makes her feel special. You're telling her something no one else knows. So you could invent secrets, you could create secrets, but you cannot tell her things that are Lashon Hara. Which brings us to the next topic. What about secrets? Someone tells you a secret. Can you just tell it to one person? So first thing is with regards to secrets. You're not allowed to tell over someone else a secret. They tell you they're about to open a business. They tell you they're about to close a business. They tell you they're about to sell their house. They tell you whatever it is in confidence. You're not allowed to tell it over. There's a trust issue here. So that's another thing. Now the Talmud says, why do we have in Torah? Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe leimor. What does leimor mean? Hashem is giving Moshe permission to tell it over. So here we have another rule. If someone tells you something, the assumption is they said it in confidence. Unless they spelled it out otherwise, the assumption is that what someone told you, they do not want you to tell other people. So we had a crazy situation. My wife and I were davening for a student of the Machon who was married for 6 or 7 years and couldn't have kids. And then they came and told me that they were expecting. And we're entering the high holidays, Yamim Noraim, Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, where we take extra diligence to pray. And my wife and I are making lists of who we're davening for. And my wife puts this family on the list to daven they should have kids. And I know they're expecting already, but I'm not allowed to tell her. And she's telling me how it's so hard for this family. And she feels so bad for them. And you know, so many years they're married and I have to keep my mouth shut, right? And then 6 months later they give birth. And my wife looks at me and says, did you know, right? I'm sitting there all upset between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur davening for them. You knew they were expecting, didn't you? What was I supposed to say, right? But she knows I couldn't tell her. They didn't give me permission to tell. If they don't tell me explicitly, I could tell my wife. So I can't. They shared something with me. I can't tell her. So that's another halacha with regards to our ears, even though we're all interested in hearing a juicy piece of information. We're really not supposed to listen or tell over something which was not meant for us. And there was a great rabbi, lived about 1,000 years ago, named Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom lived before Rashi. Rabbeinu Gershom was the one who made a prohibition to marry two wives. And he also said, you're not allowed to read someone's written information if they don't intend it for you. So that means you log onto a computer and you see your friend left his Facebook account open or his email account open. So now you're in his email and not yours. So can you just read the headings? No. Can you just read the post? No. If I am now given access to someone's information which they don't want other people to see, I am not allowed to read it. So now am I allowed to go on Facebook and see other people's information which they post publicly? The answer is yes. You'll tell me people don't always think about the fact that anyone can see their information if they don't set up their settings correctly. That's their fault. If you put out your information as dirty laundry for everyone to see and you don't make it private, so you've made it available to the public. If you come to a computer here at the Machon or something by mistake, it's still logged into someone else's account. So that's information they were not intending for you to see. You're not allowed to log into that. You're not allowed to see that. But if they made it public because they were indiscriminate about the use of their account, it's their fault. They should do more diligence, and you're allowed to read that. They posted it online. Yes, sir.
Category of Lashon Hara, but
with
secrets?
It's not Lashon Hara. No, it's a different category. It's a category of confidence. Confidence. It's a few categories, but yeah. So what we've covered so far is, what am I a mitzvah to listen to? Torah, prayer, blessings, positive things, things that are permissible, basic life. Things that are prohibited, we spoke about Lashon Hara, we gave the categories, we spoke about secrets, and then we went a little bit into other people's private information, not only in listening, but also in seeing. Yes, sir?
So I was wondering, what about the news? Secular news?
The problem with the news is that their consistency with accuracy is almost coincidental.
that even if they are accurate, Lashon Hara doesn't, true, right? It's not Motzi Shabbat.
Right. So we will cover that in the laws of Lashon Hara. It's a little bit more complex. In general, the issue with the news is that the information was made public. So public information, to a large degree, doesn't get titled as Lashon Hara. If the whole world knows that, who knows, Clinton did who knows what with Monica Lewinsky, even though Monica Lewinsky is a Jew, but it's front page of the New York Times, what you can tell me. So there, once information has been made public, then falls under a different category. The problem is that a lot of the news is misinformation. Everyone knew that Trump would lose the election, right? By all accounts. Okay? Okay, now we go on to piercings.
Why? Is that Bush again?
Piercings. Piercing one's ear. So, what I'm about to say, I was always careful not to say in the presence of women, including of my own family, because they don't have to be told this. You're about to hear something which would really annoy them if they knew. So we don't have to tell them. The Medrash says, when did people start piercing body parts? It was a sign of ownership. When you wanted to show someone was your slave, you pierced their ears. And that's why the Jews, when they left Mitzrayim, the men and women had pierced ears, because it was a sign. They were owned by the Egyptians. So the men wore earrings, the women wore earrings, because that's the way slaves were dressed. It was a sign of slavery dating back to the days of Adam and Eve. That when a person was owned by someone else, then they would, part of like branding an animal, so you'd pierce the ear. So don't go telling your wives that. Honey, I got your earrings, yes. They say, you be mine. In the most positive sense, right? We're not going to tell them that. We look at it as an adornment. Don't forget that the emos, the matriarchs, we'll see in this week's Parsha, Rivka got earrings, right? Nose rings. And that's okay. You know, whatever's the norm is okay. Today, I don't know what's accepted anymore, but there definitely are circles where it's already accepted that girls wear nose rings. Okay? I'm saying it's a certain circle you're associating yourself with. This goes back to what we discussed last week. Certain things don't fall as much under the realm of halacha. They fall more under the realm of society. Where you can't say right or wrong. You can say in society there are certain types of people that do this. For men to pierce their ears, so it's not accepted nowadays. You can't say that it's a man wearing men's garments. Generally, observant men do not pierce their ears, so men could not pierce their ears. In days or in generations where it was accepted, the Mishnah discusses a time when the men used to pierce their ears, and the Ran in Tractate Shabbos says that that's part of our definition of when something is considered male clothing or female clothing, depends on the generation. As it says in the Medrash, the Jews leaving Egypt had pierced ears. You see, Aaron tells them, take off your own earrings. He tells them, take your wife's earrings. They don't. They take their own earrings. So the men who left Egypt had pierced ears. And in Israel also, in the times of the Mishnah, you see that there were societies where it was acceptable that men wore rings and men wore earrings, as the Mishnah in Tractate Negoim tells us. So nowadays it is not acceptable by observant men. You cannot say that a man can just pierce his ears, because there are a lot of men in Ben Yehuda or Tel Aviv who walk around with earrings. That's not our gauge. We look at observant people and we say, in our observant community, are people piercing their ears? The answer is no. So that would not be right for a man to do. Women can pierce their ears. Some people have started saying in the last few decades, why should a woman mutilate her body? She shouldn't pierce her ears. I don't know. Rebecca had pierced ears. You see, throughout history, women had earrings and other ornaments. I let my daughters pierce their ears once they're old enough to make sure they don't get infected. They wear earrings, and they're fine. Why not? It's a nice thing for girls to do. What about piercing other body parts? Like I said before, it ends up being a social norm, which today is pretty much not accepted. But you can't say it's prohibited. It's just for women. Yes.
I don't understand how this society thing works, because it seems like, okay, if we decide to do this, we do that. If we decide to do that, I mean, I don't see.
How does it evolve?
No, where what's the ground that you can do it? Where can permitted to do it and when it's not. I mean,
I don't understand how
it works. It seems like you can do whatever you want as long as society agrees on it.
No. Male and female clothing are defined by what's accepted in that society. So where we live today, a lot of men wear rings. So we'll discuss that when we get to the point of discussing rings. Yeah, men wearing rings, women wearing rings.
Have it to do with halakha? This is what I don't understand. Like the example of the bicycle, can a girl ride a bicycle or not? So okay, that society says no, it's not allowed in that society.
There is no. What we see is in a society where the men wear a certain garment and women do not, so then for a woman to wear that would be a woman wearing male garments. If women have certain clothing that men don't wear, so for a man to wear that would be considered a man wearing a woman's garment. And the Torah says men aren't supposed to wear women's clothing, women aren't supposed to wear men's clothing. So we go based on society. If you go throughout many societies, there are things that men just don't do. And yet in other societies, men do. So depending on the country you live in, that will define what the social norms for men and women are. Again, the Jewish community of that country, not the non-Jewish community. We look at what's accepted in that Jewish community. And there are ample examples of that, as we discussed in other classes. Okay, so we covered the ear, we covered earrings. Was there anything else we should cover about the ear? Anything else we covered? Okay, so the Talmud says the shape of the ear is you have two ears and one mouth to teach you should listen much more than you talk. That listening is always you gain value. The Pasuk says, Emet kenei ve'al tinkor. You should try to be on the purchasing end of truth and not on the selling end of truth. If you can, as the Talmud says, Milita bechad, shetikuta betrein. If the spoken word is worth one, then silence is worth two. Because you get smarter when you listen. And when you talk, you don't. I sometimes come home and I tell my wife, I have to learn. And my wife says, weren't you learning in Machon Meir? And I say, no, I was teaching. I wasn't learning. It's not the same thing. When you're talking, so you're saying what you know. When you're listening, so hopefully you're learning things you didn't know. So that's point one about the ear. Point number two, the Talmud says the shape of the earlobe is this way so that if there are things you shouldn't be hearing, you could fold it in and avoid hearing them. And finally, if we're talking about listening, so one of the things we run into problems with is women singing. When women sing, so we're not supposed to be talking Torah. So what happens if next door to us there's a soprano? In one of the places I lived, there was just that. There was a woman who was a soprano and a top-notch singer. And she would sometimes, Shabbos afternoon, sing in her soprano voice. So she was like, I don't know, 30 meters away. But I would try to learn, and her voice went above everything else. So it says in the Rishonim and in Halacha that we live in circumstances where we can't always avoid hearing women singing. So if you can focus on what you're learning and ignore it, so you focus on what you're learning and ignore it. And even though ideally when you learn Torah you should not be hearing women singing, but if you have no choice, you have no choice. What about listening to women singing in general? So our rule is like this. Listening to one woman sing live is prohibited. It says, Ki kolecha rev umarech naveh. Your voice is beautiful. It is considered one of the alluring attributes that were granted to women. Women were given a beauty, and that beauty in halacha is described as multifaceted, and some of that beauty is supposed to be kept private for herself, for other women, for her husband, and you're not supposed to indulge in that. So if there's a single woman singing, meaning one woman, where it's only one woman singing, I'm not supposed to be there listening. What happens if there's a whole choir? So there's room to be lenient if necessary. What happens if there's one woman singing but I can't get out? I'm on the bus. So, okay, like the case of my neighbor, I can't get out. What can I do? I try to think about other things, not to be sitting there listening to her beauty. What happens if it's on the radio or on a tape or on TV? It's not considered a woman singing. It's considered a replica of a woman singing. And there, it depends on the person. if a person finds that listening to tape or music or whatever arouses him, then he's not allowed to. But if a person says, "I makes no difference to me. I'm doing my thing. She's doing her thing. It really doesn't affect me," then there's room to be lenient. Okay, so there we covered a few more points about listening. But it would be unfair to play a woman singing on a tape where all your neighbors hear and other people. Even if you feel that it has zero impact on you, you don't know what it's doing to the guy next to you. So it's not fair to your roommate. You know, listen with headphones. Okay, one final point. Women singing. If a woman is a ganenet, so ideally she shouldn't be singing when there are men around. You know, if your wife's a ganenet, then her singing should be when men aren't around. What happens when the couple is prohibited from the beginning of a woman's cycle until she goes to mikvah? So then also she shouldn't be singing in the presence even of her husband. What about Shabbos Miros? So again, because she's singing in a crowd, she's not the only one singing. So then our custom is to be lenient. At least the Yekish custom is to be lenient. Some people might get annoyed at you if they're guests at your house and your wife and daughter are singing. But there's definitely room to be lenient and allow them to sing together with everyone else at the Shabbos table. Okay, so we covered a lot of aspects of listening. With that, we're pretty much done with the ear, I think. Okay, maybe we'll end with a tip to you guys as parents. In Harvard, they did a study, and they discovered that pediatricians were only 50% right in diagnosing an ear infection. So that's interesting. It's very hard to diagnose an ear infection in a child. If your baby is up wailing and you suspect there's an ear infection, you should know that the odds of your pediatrician getting it right are 50%. Meaning it's almost like tossing a coin. So you have to pay attention. Just you should know that when it comes to a baby's ear, it's very hard for pediatricians to really see what's going on in the ear and diagnose correctly. Okay.